Good evening, everyone. It's time for the reading of the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your reader, Bethany Williams, for tonight, which is the 21st of November, 2024. And I'll be reading articles dated from from that paper. But first, the weather. Currently in Flagstaff, it's 51 degrees with winds from the east around 6 miles per hour and a little bit of clouds, but mostly clear. Relative humidity, 17%. Earlier today, we had a high of 64 and we're expecting a low of 21 coming up early in the morning. On Friday, it's supposed to be clear and sunny with a high of 65. Calm wind becoming south 5 to 8 mph in the morning, but winds could gust as high as 18, according to weather.gov. And a low of 25 is expected early Saturday morning. Saturday should be a little bit cooler and a little bit cloudier, but mostly the same. Here are today's headlines from the Arizona Daily Sun. New FUSD board members preparing for start of their new terms. Stuff the bus returns. And mental health court expansion goals receive funding boost. But at the very top, Coconino County Board of Supervisors completes canvass of 2024 general election by Cody Bashore. Completing its canvass of the November 25th general election as part of Tuesday's regularly scheduled meeting, the Coconino County Board of Supervisors approved the results and transferred them to the office of the Secretary of State, ultimately landing at a turnout of 78.29% of its 90,681 registered voters. A total of 70,933 ballots were tabulated by Coconino County for the election. The totals came up just short of 2020's general election, which saw an 81.54% turnout, 73,968 votes cast, but finished right around the estimation that Coconino County Elections Director Elisir Musta predicted in a presentation to the board in September. The turnout finished right around the total for the state as a whole, according to the results available from the Secretary of State's office on Tuesday afternoon, showing a 78.39% turnout in Arizona. The Secretary of State's office listed just three counties finishing ahead of Coconino by turnout. Yavapai County's 87.05% led the state, followed by Gila's 80.74% and Maricopa's 80.34%, while Pima County's 78.28% nearly matched Coconino. Coconino County's percentage of early voters and its return rate on early ballots came in at nearly identical totals as well, with 54,646 ballots counted from early voting. 77% of the county votes were done via early ballots. Though the percentage did not match 2020's 83.04% of the vote being conducted by early ballots, 2024 was the second highest early ballot percentage and continued the trend of at least two-thirds of voters turning to early ballots in the past decade. The remaining votes, about 23%, were conducted at one of Coconino County's 38 polling places and vote centers for a total of 15,817 ballots cast. In his portion of the presentation to the board, Musta said a total of 401 election workers were deployed on Election Day, after 457 were trained in preparation for November 5th. With the polling places and vote centers staffed, and more than three-quarters of the vote completed ahead of Election Day itself, Musta said there were no delays or closures, and that all 38 locations opened on time across the county. The elections department also worked on measuring how many check-ins were done hourly at each polling place and vote center throughout election day, as well as with the average time needed at each location, noting a peak of 152 voters at any one location on election day, the result of a march to vote at South Beaver School on Northern Arizona University's campus in the afternoon. Musta said the plan to increase vote centers was successful and went as planned. What we implemented was the right model. As a county, given our size and rural nature, we had the right mix of both vote centers as well as precinct-specific polling locations, Musta told the board. We were able to serve the voters throughout. On average, based on the data that we were able to gather, wait times were less than 13 minutes in the county, which, again, is a pretty significant achievement. Musta noted that the first voter arrived at the Cameron Chapter House at 6:01 a.m., and the final voter cast a ballot at 7:01 p.m. at Page City Hall, adding that all polling locations maintained connectivity throughout the day. The lone disruption referenced during the canvass was brought up by Coconino County Chief Deputy Recorder Donna Kasner, who confirmed that the Coconino County Recorder's office received a bomb threat, as did many other counties in Arizona. It wasn't just us. Several of the counties throughout the state received the same one, but we always take it seriously, and there was a sweep of our office inside and outside the building, Kasner said. Everything was good, we were safe, but we always want to take that seriously. Kasner expressed thanks to Coconino County Sheriff's Office Detective Tristan Meyer, who serves as the threat liaison officer, and the three deputies from the sheriff's office who responded for the sweep. Once the polls closed, the elections department also stayed on schedule for its tabulation plan, hitting more than 90% tabulation on Thursday, November 7th, a day ahead of their original goal. Whitney Juschak, assistant director of the elections department, broke down the timeline to the board with the first release of results on election night, including about 63% of the ballots cast before reaching around 85% of the ballots by the end of the night. We're proud to say we did meet the goal we had set for ourselves, said Juschak, as 91.35% was completed Thursday, 97.48% on Saturday, and ultimately 100% by Tuesday, November 12th. Partnered with political parties in the county, a hand count audit began within 24 hours and it resulted in no discrepancies. The lone remaining business for the county is an automatic recount in Page's city council race and one of its recall elections. Just 11 votes separated Deborah Rountree, Amanda Hammond, and Tom Sunshine Preller for 2nd, 3rd, and 4th in the city council race, respectively, while the recall election of David Augie and challenge from Corey Ekstrand was separated by 5 votes. The numbers that were served really speaks for itself, said Board Vice Chair and District 1 Supervisor Patrice Horseman. Coconino County has a reputation for having open, fair, transparent, and safe elections. That's to a great extent thanks to the Recorder's Office, our Elections Department, and the people from the community that came out to be poll workers. From August 1st to October 7th, the County Recorder's Office processed 14,214 voter registrations, with 9,367 coming in through the online system and 4,847 through the mail or by registration drives. Kasner said those efforts included work by Ray Daw and the Native American Elections Outreach Team, as it spent significant time on indigenous lands leading up to the beginning of early voting. The office offered mobile voter registration at Bottoway, Cameron, Inscription House, Kaibato, Lachi, Lup, Munkapi, Tonalea, Tolani Lake, and Winslow. Decisions from the Arizona Supreme Court led to issues with some voter registration submissions, as some new registrants lacked documents, proof of citizenship or residency, with the recorder's office resolving about half of the affected registrants. Broken down by age, 58% of Coconino County's voters were 45 years or older, but according to an approximation from MUSTA, with that demographic's turnout at about 84.5%. Though more than 16,000 registered voters ranged from ages 25 to 34. Just about 10,000 submitted ballots in the general direction, a turnout of around 62.5%. Similarly, registered voters between 18 and 25 landed around 68% in turnout. Voters 35 to 44 were 73.3%. As for the 54,646 early ballots that were returned, county officials detailed the various ways they were received. In addition to the recorder's office locations in downtown Flagstaff, the Flagstaff Mall, and in Tuba City, all serving as early voting sites, Fredonia City Hall, Sedona City Hall, Page City Hall, William City Hall, and the Grand Canyon Superintendent of Schools office all provided the opportunity to vote or drop off ballots. A total of 1,465 ballots were cast at the mall location, 1,401 at the downtown location, and 879 at the Tuba City site. The five other locations ranged between 49 in-person voters in Fredonia to 294 in Page. In total, the sites received 4,476 early ballots cast in person and 1,293 early ballots dropped off. The 17 drop boxes around the county received 28,015 early ballots, accounting for 51.27% of those returned, led by 8,658 to the Cherry Avenue drop box. The King Street drop box location had 3,265, followed by 2,361 to the Flagstaff Mall office, 1,952 to the Fort Valley drop box, 1,559 to the Northern Arizona University drop box, 1,391 to the Lake Mary Road Fire Department drop box. Another 477 early ballots were dropped off at the recorder's office drive-up on election day, and another 76 were dropped off to the mobile early voting site with another 169 cast in person. Among the roughly 22% of early ballots that were not counted, 804 were listed as undeliverable by the post office. 263 were rejected, primarily due to signature issues or being received too late. Another 1,564 provisional ballots were issued by the county, with 529 counted, as address changes were the primary cause of voters needing to cast their votes provisionally. More than 85% of the provisional ballots that were not counted came as a result of the voter not being registered. Uniformed and overseas citizens absentee voters accounted for another 592 ballots, and 402 federal-only ballots were counted. That article was Coconino County Board of Supervisors Completes Election Canvas. Next, new FUSD board members preparing for start of term. This is by Abigail Kessler. The Flagstaff Unified School District, FUSD, newly elected governing board members are preparing for the start of their terms. The final results from this month's election show Carolyn Kidd, Courtney Zessiger, and Melissa Kirk as the candidates who will take seats on FUSD's board in January. Kidd had 19.09% of the vote, with 17,111 ballots. Zessiger had 17.9% with 16,044 ballots, and Kirk has 16.52% or 14,810 ballots. The results became official with the Coconino County Board of Supervisors canvass on Tuesday. Each of the new members will be serving a 4-year term on the district's governing board. They will be replacing current board members Dorothy Dennett-Sozigishi, Carol Gilmore, and Christine Fredericks, whose terms all expire on December 31st. The newly elected board members shared some of their plans for their time on the board. Kidd said the education she received growing up in Trinidad and Tobago inspired her to run for the school board, as she saw a lower standard for public education when she moved to the U.S. that focused less on the whole child. She has 2 children and 3 grandchildren who attend or have attended public schools in Florida. "I figured I could bring an outside perspective to help," she said. "To make sure everybody is included, make sure all the different cultures and different levels of disposition are being heard and being served, because if it's a public school, we're talking about then everybody in the public should be served in one way or another." She described herself as very transparent. "Basically, what you see is what you get," she said. "I pull no punches on what I have to say. I will say it in a nice way, so I will not offend, but if the truth offends, I will be speaking the truth." Kidd said she'll be following FUSD Superintendent Michael Penka's lead as she begins her term on the board, though she's already been reading about past governing board actions and the federal government's plans for education under the new presidency. Her first priorities, once she takes the role, will be to learn more about FUSD's school lunch program and Arizona's ESA vouchers. These are related to her larger goals. By the end of the term, she said, she hopes to develop FUSD's curriculum to support students in their lives after high school, whether that involves higher education, teaching life skills, as well as academics. "They must still be able to get into society and learn how to live, balance a bank account, get a home, have a family, know how to solve problems, to agree to disagree, because that will help people go a long way," Kidd said. Zaysiger said being on a school governing board has been a long-time goal for her, and that her experience as a parent made her want to be more involved. She has 3 kids, 2 of whom attend Northland Preparatory Academy after being in FUSD throughout elementary, and a 3rd who will be attending kindergarten at Knowles Elementary soon. "It's surreal to be a first-generation college student that put her way through college and dedicated 20 years of her existence to public education," she said of the election results. "I feel like this is such a meaningful way to give back to the community, and I'm just humbled and honored the community got behind me and supported me through this." Zaysiger said she's been preparing for the role throughout her campaign, speaking with district teachers, administrators, and students. She said her first priority for the role will be to listen to students and teachers in order to include those perspectives in her decision-making. "I don't think we hear their voices enough, so that's going to be my first priority," she said. "It's really elevating student-teacher voice so that I can understand the challenges they're facing daily and offer them support and policy-driven decisions they need to thrive." For her term on the board as a whole, Zaysiger said her goal was to have a part in passing bonds and overrides to fund the district's needs in areas such as infrastructure, technology, and transportation, as well as to improve teacher recruitment and retention, and center a whole-child approach to education. "This looks like ensuring that every student feels safe in our schools, that they feel engaged, that they're not just sitting in desks passively learning, that they're supported, that they're challenged not only to excel academically, but as these well-rounded individuals that we're going to put out into society," she said. Kirk said she wanted to run for the school board because of her support for public education, teachers, and Flagstaff's larger community. She has a son who attends Flagstaff High School, and another who graduated from a local charter school, and specifically mentioned ESA vouchers as a catalyst for her decision to run. She said she was waiting until she joins the board to develop specific plans, and that her goal is to develop trust with both teachers and families. I would love for the parents and the teachers really to know within the first few months. Nobody's coming in to make changes, Kirk said. I think we all just want to understand how everything runs. We really want to gain the trust of everybody in the district so they know we're there for them, and decisions are being made on everybody's behalf, the best decisions that we can make. Kirk said she would like to look into the budget related to increasing teacher pay and spend time in school seeing what teachers and students are doing. The last is something she and the other new board members had agreed should be a priority. Showing the teachers that we're not just a board that sits there and makes decisions, but we're actively part of the school community. She added, I think there was a huge impact when students, teachers, can see there's adults that are not teachers and not administrators that are genuinely interested in what's happening in the classroom. Throughout her entire term on the board, Kirk said, she hopes to address declining student enrollment across the district. One idea was to showcase positive aspects of the district. Right now, FUSD has a decline of about 1-2% per year, she said. I think there's a lot of different factors that make up that decline. I have two hopes, one that we can steady out that decline, and two, if we could see it grow even. I would like to see more parents choose FUSD as their schools as opposed to homeschooling or charter schools. More about FUSD's governing board can be found at FUSD1, that's the numeral 1, .org/domain/5, the numeral 5. That was new FUSD board members preparing for the start of terms. Stuff the Bus returns to address food insecurity in Flagstaff in a special to the Daily Sun by Samuel Grumeritz. Flagstaff Family Food Center, FFFC, and the Mountain Line hosted on Sunday its 9th annual Stuff the Bus food drive since partnering with the city of Flagstaff and Coconino County, with the goal of collecting 300 turkeys and as many non-perishable food items it could get. FFFC looked to fill a bus full of food to give out during the holiday season. Sierra Chirovsky, vice president of FFFC, said that while food insecurity is an important year-round issue, it receives special attention during the holiday season. It's the time of year where most of us are gathering around the table with our family, and that table is usually very abundant, Chirovsky said. It reminds us that many of our neighbors here in Flagstaff don't have that same experience. Food insecurity has become an increasingly prevalent issue, with the U.S. Department of Agriculture reporting that 13.5% of households were food insecure in 2023, compared to 12.8% in the year before. These rates were significantly higher for single-parent and Black and Hispanic households, women living alone, and households in rural areas and major cities. According to Chirovsky, this trend began with the COVID-19 pandemic, but federal aid helped offset the difficulty. Inflation, rising housing prices, and unemployment, however, continue to affect people after the pandemic has ended, and federal aid has shrunk, leading to increasing food insecurity. To help address the issue, Chirovsky said, FFFC provides food and help through donations and volunteers. You can't change your rent, you can't change how much your utility bills are, but what you can do is come to the food bank and supplement your budget with the food that we provide, she said. Stuff the Bus also collected cash donations and any non-perishable food people were willing to contribute. FFFC encouraged community involvement through volunteering in distribution and their kitchens. Citali Vera, a Northern Arizona University sophomore volunteering for FFFC during the event, said facing food insecurity herself helped her realize the importance of making an impact on the community. It's really important to get involved in your community and be able to, you know, face those issues up front, Vera said. It's very important, as a younger generation, to be aware of those issues and address them as much as I can. Less than an hour into the event, the group had already collected several crates of canned and boxed foods, and more than 10 turkeys. Chorovsky said the donations from Stuff the Bus often stretch past the holidays and contribute food to FFFC for months. Jackie Lenners, deputy manager of Mountain Line, said the event is often quite successful, with the bus making multiple trips to empty out so items that require refrigeration do not spoil. She said some community members will take food from their houses to donate for the event instead of shopping for it in the Safeway where the bus was parked outside. With the success of Stuff the Bus, since partnering with the City of Flagstaff and Coconino County, FFFC plans to keep the tradition going into future years. Chorovsky said they may do a big 10-year blowout event next year for its decade anniversary. The event, however, relies on community members donating time as volunteers and money to buy food. Jamie Anderson, a Flagstaff community member, said he donates to Stuff the Bus every year as he does his regular grocery shopping. "We're part of the local Flagstaff community, so we always feel it's important," he said. "I believe you should always give." And that was Stuff the Bus, Returns to Address Food Insecurity in Flagstaff. You're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun program on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing audio access to print information for over 40 years. Our website is sunsounds.org, where you can learn more about us, listen to our live streams, or find individual episodes on demand. You can also listen to us now on our app, which is downloadable at the usual app stores for both iPhone and Android devices. Finally, in news articles, Mental Health Court Expansion Goals Receive Funding Boost by Cody Bashore. Aided by a grant of $550,000 spread across the next 3 years, Coconino County Supervisor Court's Mental Health Court plans to expand its capacity. Awarded the funds by the Office of Justice Programs Bureau of Justice Assistance, the Coconino County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved the acceptance of the grant during its meeting on Tuesday, November 19th. Scheduled to begin back on October 1st through September 30th, 2027, the three-year cycle of funding includes a little over $100,000 in fiscal year 25, almost $226,000 in fiscal 26, and a little over $224,000 in fiscal 27. The work is so important, and we're definitely excited to see the capacity expand and grow, said District 2 Supervisor Geronimo Vasquez. "We want to make sure we can provide these services to as many people as possible. Listening to the stories during these graduations, you hear and see the difference that it makes in our community." Sydney Charniello, the Mental Health Court Coordinator and Clinical Liaison for Coconino County Superior Court, presented on the grant application and plan for expansion before the board approved the award and plan moving forward. "We've been running our mental health court here in Superior Court for a little over 2 years now," Charniello said. "We find that, unfortunately, 25 spots is not enough for the participants in need. We want to be able to provide as much of our resources to as many of our community members as possible. The idea behind applying for this grant was to allow us to expand our program, to add additional staff to our program, to further my position to run the program, and to allow for more participants in our program." Presided over by Coconino County Superior Court Judge Joshua Steinleg in Division 2, Mental Health Court serves a high-risk, high-need population of individuals who are seriously mentally ill and have co-occurring substance use disorders that are charged with felonies, Chiarniello added during the presentation. With the funds provided to the county through the grant, a dedicated full-time probation officer is intended to be added to the mental health court program, while Ciarniello's position would be funded as well. Calling for a 25% increase in the capacity of the program, the grant also sets a goal of the county planning on how to keep the court sustainable beyond 2027. Coconino County will provide matching funds in each of the 3 years, beginning with $25,000 in FY25, $45,500 in FY26, and $90,450 in FY27. Each fiscal year, the county's contributed funding is listed as being directed to covering salaries for those who work within the project. Part of the steps to move forward with a program like this is always expansion, Ciarniello said. We're seeing a very high need, more than we can serve right now. I'm just very excited to have this opportunity to expand our capacity and to serve more of our community members. When our people succeed, they become amazing parts of our community, and I would like to see that continue. A 14-month program at minimum. The county's mental health court includes probation supervision, regular court appearances before Steinleg, who serves as the court's judge, mental health and substance abuse treatment, random drug testing, and participation in forensic peer support group. Completion and graduation of the program offers participants the opportunity for early termination of probation or the dismissal of charges upon graduation. When we talk about how there is such a need out there for mental health services, here we are, we're helping people in our courts, said District 5 Supervisor Lena Fowler. Most people don't realize how much court can do to really help individuals that are in the most need. I just commend you for your vision to be able to say, we need more, and to write this grant to be able to help more people. In addition to assisting in the hiring of a full-time probation officer and covering salaries and benefits for personnel, the grant is intended to help with travel costs, equipment, office materials, and case management software. And that was the article, Mental Health Court Expansion Goals Receive Funding Boost. I'll read some news briefs for you. First, smoke increase expected from pile burns along Snowball Road. Fire managers from the Coconino National Forest are monitoring the piles, are monitoring the burning of slash piles along Snowball Road that continue to smolder and be consumed. The piles continue to produce smoke that could be noticeable to those in the immediate area and will likely increase throughout the week. Burning the piles, left from timber treatments, removes them as potential forest fuel. The piles are 3 miles up Snowball Road, about 7.5 miles northwest of Flagstaff. Smoke may impact areas such as Fort Valley and Baderville through Friday, and potentially Saturday. Visitors utilizing Snowball Road should be aware of the burns and use caution, as U.S. Forest Service personnel and vehicles will be in the area of the burns throughout the end of the week. Adopt-a-Grandparent returns November 26th to December 15th. Walgreens locations in Flagstaff will soon have trees filled with tags, returning to them as Angels Care Home Health's Adopt-a-Grandparent arrives again for the holidays. This event is aimed at supporting seniors in the community who live without support from family and are financially burdened. From Tuesday, November 26th to Friday, December 15th, those interested can visit a local Walgreens location, select a tag from the tree, and purchase one or more of the items needed for a senior. The tag selected should be attached to the gift's purchase, which can then be dropped off at one of the two locations, or call Angels Care Home Health to have the items picked up by December 16th. Drop-off locations include Angels Care Home Health at 1030 North San Francisco Street, number 110 in Flagstaff, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, the Joe C. Montoya Community Center at 245 North Thorpe Road in Flagstaff, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Friday, and Flagstaff Subaru at 4910 East Marketplace Drive in Flagstaff, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. MNA opens new Poetry Maps exhibit. The Museum of Northern Arizona opened a new exhibit Sunday called Poetry Maps. Poetry Maps features original poems and more than 35 pieces from the museum collections. Artists with work in the exhibit include Albert Grohl, Bai Whitethorn, Dan Naminga, Mary Russell Farrell Colton, Gunnar Widforce, Louis Aiken, Mary Morris, and Peter Ray James. It will be on display through October 27th, 2025, at MNA. A special viewing for museum members featuring readings from contributors to the exhibit will be from noon to 2 p.m. on Saturday, November 23rd. According to MNA's announcement of this exhibit, it's part of a two-year map-making project intended to reflect the connection between people and place. Panels of this map have been showcased on Mountain Line buses and in Artex, and this exhibit will be the first time the original artwork is displayed alongside poems. Visitors to the museum will be able to create magnetic poetry as part of the exhibit, and submit their poems for consideration for future public displays. While the visual artist describes a place with color and lines, the poet plays with a palette of words, said MNA Director of Public Engagement, Kristen Hutchinson. The goals of Poetry Maps are to bring poetry and art into daily life, to connect people to places on the Colorado Plateau and celebrate the personal and universal experiences of this area. More information can be found at musnaz.org. And finally, in briefs, the Bluffs of Flagstaff hosting Coffee with the VA event for veterans. The Bluffs of Flagstaff will be hosting a Coffee with the VA event Tuesday to connect Northern Arizona veterans with local resources. The event will take place at the Bluffs at 3100 East Butler Avenue at 10:30 a.m. on November 26th. According to the announcement, it's open to all veterans, including those who do not reside in the Bluffs. Attendees will learn more about their benefits and community support services and meet with other veterans. An on-site Veterans Affairs enrollment specialist will provide information about benefits, assist in the enrollment process, and answer questions. We're proud to provide a space for veterans to gather, share their experiences, and learn more about the benefits available to them, said Kimberly Gutierrez, Community Outreach Director. Our goal is to show our continued commitment to the men and women who have served our country by ensuring they feel supported and informed. More information is available at Civitas Senior Living, CIVITAS Senior Living.com/the-bluffs-of-Flagstaff. And that concludes our news briefs section. We have one obituary to read. It's for Lawrence Allen Wins. He was born June 1st, 1948, and passed away on August 20th, 2024. Lawrence, or Larry, Wins of Marana, Arizona, is survived by his wife of 20 years, Linda M. Wins, his children Jennifer, married to Jed, or a partner of Jed, Wesley, and Gabriel M. Wins, and four grandchildren. Larry was born in Glen Rock, New Jersey, to Georgia Morgan Wins and Lawrence Adolph Wins. He graduated from Glen Rock High School before heading to Florida to attend Stetson University. He was a member of Pi Kappa Alpha fraternity. After 4 years studying chemistry and enjoying beach life, Larry entered Emory University Dental School in Atlanta, Georgia. Here he met his future wife, Linda Pardue. Upon graduating and joining the U.S. Air Force in 1974, Larry and Linda married in Nashville, Tennessee, and immediately moved to Japan. He was stationed at Tachikawa AFB and later Yokota AFB, serving as a dentist until his honorable discharge in 1977. Larry was always proud of his service as a captain in the USAF. Larry joined a dental practice in Tucson, Arizona, in 1978. The couple's first child, Jenny Bell, was born there. After 5 years in Tucson, they moved to Flagstaff, where Larry established his own dental practice. Soon he was able to fulfill a lifelong dream and purchased his first Harley-Davidson motorcycle. Always a fan of the open road and rock and roll, he spent many happy hours cruising the back roads of Arizona and Colorado, even making it to Sturgis, South Dakota. Larry's son Gabriel was born in 1986. Though the growing family could not all fit in the back of a Harley, at the same time they spent as much time as possible camping and hiking in the wilderness and parks of the Southwest with good friends and family. Life happened, challenges arose, goodbyes were said. After 40 years, Larry retired in 2014. A special mention must be made of his longtime employees and friends, Rose and Eleanor. You helped him tremendously with giving the high-quality care he delivered to his patients. Larry moved to Marana, Arizona, with his second wife and lived the remainder of his life happy to return to the warm desert climate he had so loved when first discovering Arizona. Larry is buried in the Arizona Veterans Memorial Cemetery at Marana. Rest in peace, Captain Wince, you are missed. To plant trees in his memory, please visit the Sympathy store at sympathy.legacy.com. And that was the obituary for Lawrence Allen Wins. Now it's time for bum ba dum bum 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 ba dum sports. NAU basketball knocks off Arizona at home 92-75 by Eric Newman. There was no other way for the Northern Arizona basketball team to describe Wednesday's performance better than the word special. The Lumberjacks, with a 4-1 record, not only upset Arizona, but they actually came back from a double-digit deficit in the first half and dominated the previously undefeated Wildcats, winning 92-75 in Roll Activity Center. Lumberjacks coach Lori Payne has won plenty of games and will likely break the program record for victories by a coach by the end of the season. But few of her 119 felt better than this one. It's definitely up there. One of my first couple of years, we beat them up here too. Anytime you can beat a Power 5 team, especially on your home court, it's pretty special. I feel so excited for our seniors who have been here, who have put in the time, players who have transferred in and are on the end of their career, to get this win in their senior year is something they will remember forever, she said. It's pretty special, Lumberjacks guard Nyan Morin said. When I first got here, I would say we weren't the best, but we've been working towards this. Six players scored in double digits, led by Moran with 22 on a 75% shooting day. Guard Leah Beatty scored 17, also racking up 9 rebounds and 5 assists. Forward Sophie Glancy finished with 17 points, and guard Taylor Feldman added 16. Guard Olivia Moran scored a 10, as did forward Sanaya Neverson, who recorded a double-double with a career-best 15 rebounds. It wasn't some crazy statistical anomaly game either, in which the Lumberjacks won by a barrage of three-pointers or a historically bad shooting night for the Wildcats. The Wildcats actually shot better from the field, hitting 46.9% from the field as opposed to 43.5% from the host. The difference was the fundamentals such as rebounding. Northern Arizona won that battle 44-38, along with ball security and a selfless style of fast offense. The Lumberjacks recorded 23 assists to just 11 from the Wildcats. Northern Arizona also attacked the basket much more effectively, shooting 29 free throws, while Arizona attempted just 18. And Northern Arizona's defense was spectacular. Payne has admitted she's not a fan of the zone. The Lumberjacks played it to near perfection, though, after struggling with the bigger, stronger Wildcats in a man-to-man style in the first quarter. "We don't typically play zone. It's really our third defense for us. We knew coming in that the teams that have played Arizona close a little bit in the past have played zone, so we may need to go to it," Payne said. She added, "We were ready." It looked like the typical Big Sky versus Power Conference game at first. The Lumberjacks ran out to an 8-4 lead behind 6 points from Glancy and a layup from Naya Morin with 7:01 left in the first quarter. Then things went south. Northern Arizona didn't hit a shot from the field the rest of the quarter, missing 11 straight attempts. The Wildcats ended the quarter on a 19-3 run as the Lumberjacks turned the ball over 7 times in the quarter and looked to have no answers. Arizona led 23-11 after a period. It wasn't until Beatty hit a transition layup off a steal from off a steal with 7 minutes 34 seconds remaining until halftime, that the Lumberjacks finally nailed a field goal. Then they hit a bunch more. Beatty shot 5-for-6 in the second period, including a 4-for-4 mark on threes as the Lumberjacks surged back. A 20-0 run capped by a Glancy free throw tied the game at 29 with 3 minutes 24 left in the period. A Beatty three-pointer a couple of possessions later gave Northern Arizona its first lead of the period, 32-31, at the 2-minute 47 mark. "I think it was just that once I hit that first one and it's like, okay, I can settle in." So we all kind of went on that run, and I was shooting it and I was like, "I feel like I can pull up from half court right now. I was feeling good. I think we just played as a team so well and found each other so well," Beatty said. At one point, the Lumberjacks were on a 17-2 run to take over. They didn't commit a single personal foul in the second quarter, while shooting 7-for-9 themselves from the foul line. They also committed just one turnover in the period, compared to the 7 they'd given up the quarter prior. The frustrated Wildcats went into the locker room down 41-38 at halftime. Northern Arizona only increased the advantage from there, leading by as much as 18 in the second half. Northern Arizona will now look to win a 4th consecutive game when it visits Colorado State on Saturday in Fort Collins, Colorado. And that was the article, NAU Basketball Knocks Off Arizona at Home. And we have CHS Senior signs to Cal State Northridge, also by Erica Newman. For several years, Coconino Senior Caitlin So has been one of the top softball players in Arizona. After this season, she'll go and try to be just as productive at the Division I level. During a ceremony at Coconino High School on Monday, So signed to play for Cal State Northridge in Los Angeles. "I was so excited for today, and I was very excited for everyone to come and say hi and congratulations. And the ones who showed up were the ones who were here throughout the whole way," So said. The pitcher has made an impact since her freshman season with the Panthers, who have won the last three consecutive Grand Canyon Region titles with her starting in the circle. Tso has earned 4A All-Conference honors in each of the last 3 years, and she was named the conference's Defensive Player of the Year in 2022. She's the two-time defending Grand Canyon Regional Player of the Year and has been named the Arizona Daily Sun Softball Athlete of the Year for three consecutive seasons. In the spring of 2024, she recorded 13 no-hitters from the circle and 281 strikeouts, and all the while she's been improving her hitting. Tso totaled 36 RBIs last season, tied for second on the team with a team-best 7 home runs. More than stats, those around Tso have been encouraged by her effort to improve. "She's one of the hardest workers I've ever been able to coach," Panthers manager Kimberly Dennis said. Dennis added, "I'm super proud of her. Just the maturity she's grown into each and every year as a player and teammate has been awesome to see." Tso began the journey as a young child. Her older sister was playing softball, and Tso said she remembers being unable to sit still watching games. She had to go onto the field and try it for herself. She enjoyed the sport as just something to entertain herself and stay active at first, but when she was part of the Flagstaff Girls Softball Little League All-Star Team that won the state championship in 2020, she realized she might be starting something special. It wasn't much later when she decided she wanted to try to excel in high school and attempt to make a college roster. "I started noticing I could go far, and I started doing even more because I wanted to continue my journey past the 4 years of high school," Tso said. She's played club softball year-round and been a staple for the Panthers. Tso was just the second player to sign with a D1 program under Dennis. She took up a couple of visits to Northridge and was impressed with the program. Furthermore, she felt like the players took an immediate liking to her, and she felt comfortable with them and on campus. Now Tso will train the rest of the off-season. She's also set to play for the Panthers girls basketball team this winter before her senior year with the softball squad. She's excited about her future and knows there's still much to be done. "What's next is training more than I ever worked. I have to go and produce for that school and show what I can do on and off the field," Tso said. She added, "It's going to be hard because I'm away from home and away from my family, but I'm doing it for them and doing it for myself, for who I want to be." That was CHS senior Tso signs to Cal State Northridge. With just a few minutes left, I will read the Gardening Etc. column, A Few Key Terms for Growing Season, by Cindy Murray. Planning to embark on some high-altitude gardening and landscaping projects come growing season? If so, you may benefit by becoming familiar with a few key terms. First, let's talk about the growing season, which is loosely defined as the number of days between the last killing frost of spring and the first killing frost of fall. Coconino County comprises a multitude of growing seasons. For example, the neighborhoods near Mount Eldon may enjoy a growing season of over 100 days, while Baderville may experience less than 50 days. Flagstaff averages 90 days in which frost-sensitive plants thrive. So if you're planning on seeding a vegetable garden directly into the ground, be sure to check the seed packet label for the number of days to harvest. You can fool Mother Nature, though, by using season-extending practices. One method is to start seeds indoors and plant them outdoors once the possibility of frost has passed, typically June 10th to 15th in Flagstaff. I'm able to use transplants of tomatoes in early to mid-June by surrounding each plant with wall waters. Many gardeners plant early by utilizing row covers, cold frames, or hoop houses. Our local nurseries have a wealth of knowledge and supplies pertaining to the subject. Tying in closely with growing season is the hardiness zone. Based on the average annual minimum temperature, it serves as a standard to determine a plant's likelihood to survive the winter. For example, Flagstaff is rated as Zone 6B, which means it has an average minimum temperature of 0 to negative 5 degrees Fahrenheit. But certain sectors of the region may vary. For example, Baderville may experience lower lows, while neighbors near Mount Eldon may be higher. While housing the largest stand of ponderosa pine in the world, our region is nonetheless classified as high desert due to lack of abundant precipitation. The sparse rainfall, low humidity, and high winds of spring and early summer can desiccate your daisies before you know it. Additionally, many communities of Coconino County are faced with water restrictions and high water rates. Experienced gardeners have found ways to combat these hindrances. Mulch is essentially a blanket of organic or inorganic materials applied on top of the soil for the purposes of conserving soil moisture, protecting roots from temperature fluctuations, and controlling weeds. We gardeners often spread organic mulch at the base of plants during the growing season. You may purchase ready-made mulch, or you can be creative using materials such as newspaper, leaves, grass clippings, and pine needles. In the winter, you may apply inorganic mulch, like clean cinders, to prevent heat loss. Another way horticulturalists counteract dry conditions is to employ xeriscaping, a method of landscaping that's fashioned to deal with low moisture and to conserve water. We specifically seek out specimens that are drought-tolerant, meaning they're able to withstand long periods with little or no water. There are countless varieties of drought-tolerant trees, shrubs, and flowers that you may use to create harmonious, colorful, and attractive xeriscape. You've all heard the term monsoon, but what is it, really? The monsoon of the American Southwest is a seasonal shift in wind from generally westerly to generally south or southeasterly. Uneven summer heating between southwestern deserts and the oceans causes masses of air at sea to load up on moisture and head north. A combination of ground-level solar heating and mountain barriers force the air upward, where its water vapor cools, condenses, and builds thunderheads. The resulting powerful summer storms may replenish parched soils in a matter of minutes. My garden and I are in our glory during monsoon season. There's nothing quite like a cool afternoon downpour to rejuvenate both the earth and the human spirit. These are the days I take a moment to gaze across my flourishing landscape and know that the extra effort required for cultivating in the mountains is absolutely worth it. And that was the Gardening Etc. column. And that's all the time I have today for this reading of the Arizona Daily Sun. Your reader from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona is Bethany Williams. Thanks for listening, and coming up next, it's the Washington Post.